Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, Bay Sox and Giants, time out. Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 138 as our relentless rally keeps going here. This is what the Trump has given us, according to everybody. So he's going to give us wealth beyond our wildest means. So there you go. We have Mr. Kevin.
Yes, and I too am relentless.
Yes. I'm missing the part in this college football thing. If the Irish are four, why don't they get the highest ranked team, not getting the bye? Why don't they play the 12th seed and not the 11th? What am I missing there?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, one of us.
So if they're the four and they don't get. They obviously aren't going to get one of those first four byes because those are reserved for conference teams. So if they place fifth, then yes, they will get the 12th team, and they will get them in South Bend.
This morning they were saying that the Irish at the fourth spot would play number 11, Alabama, which is kind of
weird.
Well,
that's not true, so anybody who's saying that is dead wrong.
That's what I thought. That's why I asked you.
Yeah, so think of it as a 16-team tournament. The last four are open spots. So one gets 16, in other words, a bye. Two gets 15, a bye. Three gets 14, a bye. And four gets 13, a bye. Five gets 12, six gets 11, and so on. Just like the basketball tournament.
All right, then. Well, I mean, that's what I thought. That's why when I heard this, I thought it was kind of messed up.
Yeah, well, I heard some of the talking heads on the sports thing talking about, you know, the bye teams getting to host a second-round team on their campuses, and that's not true either.
So they're going to be in, like, the bowl games, right?
Yeah, so the first-round games are the games that with the teams that aren't, that, you know, that don't have the bye, and those will all be on the campus site of the higher-ranked team. And then after that, yeah, it goes into the bowls. So, as an example, the next round it will include the Fiesta Bowl. And I'm going to be in Arizona visiting my son and daughter-in-law then, and we're going to the Fiesta Bowl game. I don't know who's going to be in it. I would be delighted if it were the Irish, but I don't know that it will be. But whatever it is, we'll see a playoff game.
I know I sort of harp on this, but. I can't get over it. These games are 4 hours long now. I can't believe that people are going to sit in this weather for 4 hours. But I guess
they
are.
But they will. They will. You know, whether they'll sell out all the stadiums, I don't know. It's right before Christmas. Notre Dame has, you know, arranged their academic schedule around the possibility of hosting a playoff game. So finals will run the week before. They're keeping the dorms open into the weekend. So that the students can stick around. How many of them will go home for the holidays and how many of them will stick around for that weekend? I don't know, because we're talking about December 20th, potentially.
Yeah.
Well, you know, how many people are going to travel right before Christmas?
Are there games on Friday night?
I do know people who've made their hotel reservations and they're coming to South Bend, but I don't know if it will be in the usual quantities. I don't know how many day trippers are going to be able to take a day off right before the holidays when there's family parties and work parties and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how it works out for hosting. I imagine they'll draw good crowds. I don't know if they'll fill their stadiums, though.
$250 a ticket if you want a good seat.
Yeah, although I think they're doing like $25 a seat for the students, so that's kind of cool.
I didn't see, but the thing Jan sent us was, it $250, $180, and one end zones or $150 or $120 or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not paying $250 to freeze. I'll watch it in the comfort of my living room.
Yeah, I'm going to try and have to get a few people to watch it with, because I can't watch the thing all. Are there some games on Friday as well? They said it was either 20.
There's going to be one game Friday, probably Friday night. So how would you like a night game in South Bend to kick off the tournament?
Well, I bet the one on Saturday is going to be a night game.
It could be. It could be a noon game for all we know. You know, it just it depends on what the matchups wind up being and who they think they'll get to watch it. Because there's going to be three games on Saturday, so they'll line them up for noon, for 3:30, and for a night game.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
We'll see who gets what.
Well, 3:30.
When I say noon, I'm talking Eastern time. So,
well, 3:30 is really a night game. I mean, duh, if you're
yeah. Going. Well, especially this time of year, they'll probably space it out a little bit more. So I don't know if they'll start a little earlier or put a little more time between the games, and rather than doing the 3:30 Eastern, maybe they'll do 4:00 Eastern instead. I don't know how they'll how they plan to do that, but we'll see.
I'm still mystified in a basketball tournament as to who they gave the NIL money to. Does Notre Dame have a czar of NIL money, or is there an official guy who does that now, or what?
Oh, there probably is somebody with the title, you know, the longstanding title of director of basketball operations, who handles that kind of stuff. They may have an NIL person. I don't know. I have seen that at other schools, that there is somebody who's like the associate athletic director in charge of NIL, which means there's a coordinating function of some sort, or an oversight function of some sort, or God knows, I've never read a job description, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's how can you? Every time I think of this, I think of the Boardwalk Empire when the guy says, "Nucky, you can't be half a gangster, Nucky." How can it be? You can be in on this, and you're out on this. I don't. It's unbelievable. They're not supposed to touch the money that they touch the money that they're all involved in. I mean, it's. I didn't get a chance to ask you the Michigan Ohio State fiasco. When do we get to the point where we can find the players? We're all making money, right?
I suppose, yeah. It sort of changed my opinion about how I criticize players too, because I used to think, okay, the guy, he may or may not be very good. He may make mistakes, etc. But you know what? He's a college kid playing for virtually nothing. You know, tuition, room, board isn't trivial, but it's. But he's not really getting paid anything resembling the economic value that the kid creates. So I would be reluctant, especially in a public forum, to be critical. But now they're pros. I don't see why I'd treat them any differently than the guys on the Chicago Bears or the Chicago Bulls. Well, if they're on the Chicago Bulls, they probably treat them like crap. But everybody else, I would treat them very much the same now.
Well, the Bulls are giving every other basketball coach in the world a tutorial in the Olé defense.
Yeah.
Here's how you play the Olé defense. See how you get out of the way of that guy. You don't make that switch. You don't talk. You don't.
Yeah. There is only one team that that can proudly play Matador defense.
What's with the
That's the Cal Northridge Matadors.
Yeah. God. Hey, what do you make of the moves in the market and all this stuff? I mean, we're just relentlessly up. I don't know whose job it is. I don't know if it's Powell's or when somebody. We're right back absolutely on a 5.1% rise in money supply since July. I can't believe it's Biden. I don't know if it's Powell. So somebody's pulling that string somewhere.
Well, nobody wants to be blamed for a recession. So they're trying to thread the needle between not too much inflation and recession. And unfortunately, if we're really going to do anything about the price levels, we're going to have to take some medicine at some point.
Well, we have to take nominal medicine. I don't know if we'd have to take real medicine. I got a question for you. I mean, you haven't, I don't think, dug into the kind of the history of some of these wacko I'm going to say the Weimar Republic. I don't think, Kevin, they ever could even conceive of having a recession by the definition we have it. Because the GDP always had to go up, right? With all the money in the system?
Yeah, but did real GDP go up?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you count it. I think you could make a strong case that since 2000, clearly since 2007, 85% of our population has been in a recession. I think I could prove that real easy. If you make two or three adjustments in the CPI number, if you pull the medical stuff up to even 17-18% of the account of the basket instead of 6,
or even just 15, you know, or even nice 15. Round number there.
And if you mess with home prices and get rid of the owner's equivalent rent stuff and somehow kick a little taxes in there, because then you pick up your education costs on the lower end, which are not even in there, I don't think. If you did that, I think you would find the inflation rate has been somewhere between 3 and 4 for the last 20-some years, and we have not grown that fast. Real growth, I don't think, do you?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
So, I mean, if you do that, I think, but if we're doing this to the money, we will never show a recession. We'll never have one. Just keep the deflator.
It would be interesting to see someone not just create that kind of an index, but somebody who had enough audience for that kind of an index to be reported and explained properly. But there isn't, for the most part. Although, who did I see on Fox Business? Oh, no, it was different subject, AI. But, you know, but it is the same kind of thing. The skepticism that many of us on this show offer about the economy is the same kind of skepticism about AI. The guy's comment was, they're talking about how many jobs it's going to take over and all that. He said, we're 20 Nobel Prizes away from that happening.
Yeah, probably. When you start counting, though, I mean, we try and talk, Kevin, when we're not arguing about God knows what. We try and talk about, what exactly is the political process. And when you look at the political process, it's supposed to be people essentially running for, it's a different business than other businesses. I mean, a lot of it we don't understand. I mean, politicians do. That's why people think they're different, and they are, because they're in a different business. But if you look at something simple, like of their villages or towns or what they are in Pennsylvania or Illinois, God knows where. There's 20,000 people who live there, and you're going to elect somebody. Essentially, the person you're going to elect is saying, "Look, I can manage this business or this place. I can have the schools running. I can have police. I can have fire. I can have those kinds of things, and I can do it for this tax level." It's basically his spiel, right? Just like almost like a CEO would be. And the other guy says, "No, I'm going to do this, this, and this. By the way, but I'm going to have to tax you a little more, or I'm going to tax a little less. I'm going to cut out whatever the different, plans are." Two pieces of paper hit the table. Obviously, personality is part of it. And somebody says, "I'm going to go. I'll vote for that. I don't care if the kids. I'm not saying anything wrong about this. I don't care if the kids get some spectacular gymnasium in high school. You know what, that gymnasium they got is plenty good enough. We don't need $50 million in there. I'm not I'm not going to vote for that guy. I'm going to vote for the other guy. But when you start lying about the numbers or borrowing money where you say, okay, I'm not raising your taxes and I'm giving you all this crap, but oh, by the way, somebody owes it down the line.
And the government will pay for it.
Yeah. But somebody owes it down the line. I mean, I think you end up getting almost like non-truth and labeling at some point. I mean, when Mayor Daley, who I happen to like a lot, I mean, I knew him personally, and he's still alive. I mean, when he sold the Millennium Park, when he sold the Skyway, when he sold the parking meters, he basically said, oh, no, I did okay this year. No, you didn't. That was a one-time thing, and he put it into current. Well, anybody would have 2 seconds in an accounting class would sit there and go, wait, you did what? You took it to current income? How do you do that? It's not, you know, if you sell an asset, it should almost be like endowing a professorship, right? It should be going to a separate account where the interest from it flows in for the next 50 years for anybody who's mayor. So if you get $100,000 a year out of the parking thing, that's all you can count, right? Something like that has to. But now we're going crazy with the numbers, and we have a guy coming into president who they all lie to a certain extent, but he's talking to a population. Look what I'm going to do with tariffs, and you sit there and go, tariffs are like 1% not even 1% of the total take of the government, but everybody's convinced that somehow or another Mexico, Canada or something. I mean, Trump didn't actually say that, but he doesn't have to because he knows that people are so dumb that Canada's going to be paying $40 billion next year in taxes. Well, good. Mine won't go up. Mine will go down. No. I mean, how do we get such non-truth? I'm not pointing at one side or the other. Every side does it. They never tell anybody the numbers, and people don't care, Kevin. I mean, I was never asked back. I was on with Joan Esposito. Well, she's a terrific lady. I like her. I liked her forever when she was on Channel 7 when we were young. One day she goes, I don't have any debt. And I was on the thing, and I go, well, sort of, yeah, you do. She says, what do you mean? I said, every taxpayer owes $261,000 in U.S. debt. And she goes, why'd you have to tell me that? I was having a good day. does nobody get it? I can't believe what both sides keep telling people, and they somehow believe it. I don't know. It's just crazy, Kevin. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and here's the thing: is people can relate. If I max out all my credit cards, I get it. But what happens when someone else maxes out my credit card for me? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
With the $261,000 of debt. Now that's way up for that from there. That we have people maxing out our credit cards for us, and that doesn't seem to register with people. So that's a problem. That's a big problem because there's this really dumb attitude out there that's part of it. There are people who understand that, but there's also enough people who just think, well, the government's paying for it. Well, wait a minute, the government's maxing out your credit card. It's on your account, and sooner or later somebody's going to have to pay that, at least some of it. We're going to have to pay it down, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, I mean, and plus you have your basic. I mean, I'm sure it happened, but I know it happened because I've read a lot about the Roosevelt administration, where people would come to the guy was elected in November and he wasn't put in until March, right back in those days. So it was, the guy had a steady stream of 10 people a day he talked to. But then again, he was handicapped and couldn't go anywhere. But this stream of people going to Mar-a-Lago, Meta's been up, 7% in the last few days because the guy went to see Trump. I mean, what is Trump going to give the guy? I mean, what does he think? I mean,
I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe nothing. But, certainly Zuckerberg's a guy who can get an audience with him and get something, but that's why is that any different than Trudeau running down there? Which he did. Even the Morning Joe people, Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough went there. which really pissed off their fans. But, you know, they went and said, okay, we have to have some kind of dialogue. Well, what are they going to get out of it? What are they hoping to get out of it? Some kind of regular pipeline of information for them that's going to allow them to keep their jobs because their ratings are in the tank. So, yeah, everybody's got an interest. I get that.
Well, but the idea is do you have somebody in that spot who doesn't necessarily want to curry favors with people? Or do you have somebody who thinks that's the way business is done? That's one of the problems. If you think that, you know, that job is just, it's been, I mean, you know, what is, if Meta, you know, the Zuckerberg's company decides to do whatever Trump wants him to do, does Trump think he can stop an antitrust thing or not let anybody look at them, or if they have...
I don't know. What do you suppose Trump wants from him?
I have no idea. I mean, something. I mean, they all seem to want... but, I mean, what we have...
Might he want less censorship? What is it, Section 230? Might Zuckerberg be angling to try and keep his Section 230 exemption? I mean, these are the discussions they're having.
Well, the taxes are probably the biggest thing. Can they still screw around in Europe and not pay? I mean, the Trump tax.
Well, they have different issues, and you know, the social media companies have different issues in Europe, because Europe, most of those countries do want more censorship on social media. Whereas, in the U.S., there is a groundswell of support for less, although there certainly are still the hardcores who want to control misinformation. I put that in quotes, which you can't see me doing, or disinformation. That's the better word. Disinformation is the one they like now. There's a whole lot of discussion, and there's real policy built around that.
Well, I think there is a somewhat of a difference as things go down the line. It's like, you know, we have a couple of people in our group that think NIL is nothing more than it's been there the whole time.
I think it's true in construct. I think it's just spun out of control.
But there, you do get to a point where if you have a stream in your backyard that once in a while creeps into your backyard, and all of a sudden, one year, the entire house goes away. Ah, well, you knew you were close to the creek. There's a little bit of a difference. I don't know what to do about the information thing, Kevin. I know that people have a right to publish wherever they want. They normally would put their name on it if you had a newspaper. If you went down to the town hall, to attend the town, and you put a thing up on the wall, like Martin Luther, they knew Martin Luther did it, right? When he put the thing on the church, there was an ownership to the stuff, and if you just plain out said there's 5,000 people in this town, everybody looked around and goes, looks to me like there's only 500. Who is this idiot? But now it seems like it's so easy to throw basically crap out there that's totally wrong, and people are willing to believe it. If it's, you know, assailing. I watched, unfortunately, I've never done this before, Kevin. I've never watched any of these kind of hate shows at night. I mean, I watch this stuff all day long for my clients, so one thing I never did, I never kicked the night CNBC, or not CNBC, MSNBC. Well, last night we were downstairs because we had our big compliance meeting yesterday, which I want to talk about a little bit. We had a big compliance meeting. Somehow or another, I was facing the TV, and because there was no ball game on, they had, who's the blonde on Fox? What's her name? Or is it Lauren Ingram?
There's blondes on Fox. Jeez.
No, but who's the one that has the
That doesn't narrow it down. But if you're thinking of the nighttime show, I think it's probably Laura Ingram.
Yeah, and all I was doing was watching the headlines. Kevin, it was. How does she stay so focused, hating people through that whole show? I never saw anything like it. I mean, I'm sure.
You know, I can't say I've watched it a lot, but that's not my impression that she's focused on hating people.
So. Well, I mean, we're talking about.
If you're going from the crawl on the TV, then you know you might get a different impression.
Yeah, I was doing, but I mean, here, you know, they'll show, you know, Biden like in the rain or something. Here's their president, and then here you see an airbrush thing of Trump, like almost sitting on a horse like Caesar. Here's our guy. And I'm sitting there going, what is the purpose of that? What are we doing? Who even thinks of this crap? Then they got all these people walking down the street heading for like our border and like a street with traffic. I'm going, that could be downtown Paris. I have no idea where they got that footage. I mean, it just was one after another. I mean,
news media does get called a lot on what footage they use, so they may be a little more careful about that nowadays, because there have been so many times that they get busted for showing something from... It was like the when they were talking about people in cages at the border crossing stuff, and they were blaming Trump for it and showing footage from the Obama administration. So those kinds of things get called out pretty regularly.
Well, I'm concerned, Kevin.
Tom, you it's worth paying attention to the news enough. I mean, I don't know if you've ever sat down and watched an MSNBC nighttime show for...
I don't on purpose, by the way.
Yeah, well, and I would say if you want to speak about it, then you probably need to do it just to see. And I know you get exposed to, is it Newsmax or somebody like that?
Yeah.
So I know you see that periodically anyway, so you need to see the other side of it, and it's the same. But if you want to be a critic of it, but there also are actually some, I'd recommend two things. And this is just for listeners in general. There is some coverage of media, and what they do and the, bad information they have. And there's those kinds of sources out there, and they're kind of interesting because it does teach you to have your BS meter out. But the other thing, and this is, if I learned nothing else from this most recent election cycle, it's that there are lots of long form interviews, not just 5 minutes or anything like that. You can go to the podcasts, what Trump did, like 13 podcasts that, where you sit down for anywhere from 1 to 3 hours with people. Harris didn't do it, and I think it cost her dearly not doing it, but I don't know if she would have been any good at it, because she's not very good as an extemporaneous speaker. But if you want to know, what Ramaswamy and Musk are planning to do, they do interviews like every 2-3 days that go on for a long time. This stuff is all knowable, but people don't have the patience to go beyond soundbite news coverage. But I think there are a lot of people, especially in younger generations now, who are totally willing to listen to the long form stuff. And I think that made a huge difference in the election. And I'm hoping it kind of takes, a little more hold as we go up into our age group. As an example, because that is a more thoughtful discourse, and I think that's just really important for people to sample that.
This is where you and I have one of our somewhat fundamental disagreements, and it's just a disagreement we have, and I honestly don't know which one of us is right, because I can absolutely see your point, but I'm jaded because I've done been on the air so long. John and I were on the Score 20 some years ago, for God's sake. And it is constantly drives home to me that people can communicate in a lot of different ways and say stuff where if you read the print, it looks like somebody says one thing, and yet if you realize the effect people have gotten from it, they all believe something totally different. And I honestly think one of the greatest example of that was in the movie Major League, right? Where the third baseman came up and said, "It's in my contract, I don't have to do push-ups." And the manager wings it on the ground. They didn't show this. All of a sudden you hear something splashing. He reaches down to where his male parts
took a leak on it.
Took a leak on it. Never said a word. When you can 2 days after you have a rally or something, either side, talking about what we're going to do, with these tariffs, and we're going to do this. And if everybody walks away, because people don't have this, they're not like you, Kevin. They don't read the whole thing. Nobody does. I'm very aware that if I came on the air and started talking about, make sure you don't take any investment advice from me, but God bless, I got this guy who says the stock is going to be in the tank this afternoon. Even though, don't listen to me, don't do whatever you want, but by the way, it looks to me like maybe this, that's all people take away. People are pretty good at grabbing what people hear out of these meetings on both sides, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Tom, you're right. There are people who will carve out sound bites that can't be helped. But if you listen to the whole thing, it's like listening to Stocks and Jocks. You know, we probably don't have that many great sound bites, and we certainly do get people who will, you know, grab one thing that one or the other of us says. Heck, I do that to you all the time. But we also, you know, have the ability to ask questions back and forth,
right,
to disagree, to ask follow-up questions, all of those kinds of things. And if you sit and listen to the whole interview, that's when you get the follow-ups. That, you know, if you have it with good interviewers, it's just that we don't see good interviewers at work on the more traditional news channels, even to call cable news traditional. We just don't see it because they do everything in sound bites.
But we're,
and that's why they're getting creamed now. That's why their ratings suck.
But we're sort of splitting hairs here. Right? I'm saying, let's take the, for instance, the deportation of whatever. I'm sure that if you sat Trump down, like somebody did, like you were saying, the long interview he was on, that he would. He's probably very capable of saying what his plan is regarding this stuff and how he's going to do this and that. All I know, Kevin, is the people I talk to absolutely are convinced and are counting on people showing up at their house, throwing them in a paddy wagon, throwing them on a train, and get them the hell out of here, and they don't care where they go.
And you're not talking to that many Gen Xers who do actually listen to some of these podcasts. And I'm not even talking about Rogan, because I don't know that he's
that. No, but
that
what I'm saying is
with that age group, but
that's the message that's out there.
I get that, and that is a message that's out there. It's not the only one, and it's not, you know, that when I take it back to the election, that's not the kind of thing that swayed a lot of younger people. They, you know, what swayed them was actually listening to the whole conversation, catching Trump being kind of a regular guy most of the time. You know, was part of it. You know, he wasn't the Hitler fascist that they kept calling him. But also, you know, getting explanations for this, that when they say, well, you know, what are you going to do with this mass deportation? He said, well, you know, the answer is, well, we're going to start with people who've been convicted of crimes. And so, okay, most people can salute that. And he said, then we're going to really start looking at employers because the employment practices with people who are in the country illegally have been abysmal anyway. So we're not treating the people who are here well, but we're also, you know, the employers are where we have a problem. So then we're going to start working on the employers, and then we'll see where we are. You know, I mean, that's sort of a logical approach that makes sense. So anybody who thinks that they're all going to be rounded up, put on trains, and taken to the border and pushed out the door is just not paying attention.
But all right, but he's already got the vote.
I know, yeah. That's a lot of people, Tom, but it's not everybody.
My Hispanic friends tell me they can't believe how many people in the neighborhood voted, not just for him, because people vote wherever they want, but the reason was, all these other people are getting this fast track, all this money to be citizens tomorrow, and we've been here forever. I don't think that's been the case, but that's the message they got. Now somebody delivered it. I mean, somebody could go, you know, get on Stocks and Jocks and say, "Oh man, I never meant that." Doesn't matter. That's what got out there, and that's what got you the vote.
They actually are, because when you grant an asylum claim, then you do have a faster track to citizenship than if you just entered the country illegally. So, you know, that there is truth to that. Now, maybe that's not being translated into universal truth rather than truth in specific cases.
Right.
But But that is a fair number of them. So that's, you know, that again, people don't, you know, don't always discern it, but anybody who takes the time to, anybody who wants to know can know, and anybody who doesn't know doesn't, hasn't tried to know. How about if I put it that way?
Well, you're not going to get any disagreement on that. But I'm just saying that the message is, I mean, the as if you and I were ever involved in politics, we'd have to be real careful about any kind of a program that makes sense. Because you don't get a voter by doing something intelligent, but you can lose a voter if it's going to affect him. I mean,
yeah, and they're all happy. They're all happy to push the emotional button if they can.
But I mean, the truth is, in the tax cuts that came in the Trump administration, and there's always BS no matter who puts tax stuff together, Democrats or Republicans. But the idea was that we were going to stop all this people sliding away overseas and not paying taxes here. I would bet you a beer, Kevin, it's easier now for companies to avoid taxes here by being overseas than it was before that tax thing. It didn't stop any of that.
And it wasn't going to stop it. It was supposed to incentivize bringing operations here. We'll see. And I don't know the answer to that, honestly. I don't know if it has, and I don't know if it has affected operations of the companies in any way, because I haven't looked into it, so I'm not going to comment on that specifically. You can speculate it, yeah, but I'd like to hear how that works.
I will say that if you look at the numbers, there's a slightly higher percentage of the federal tax revenue is corporations than it was 20 years ago. Now, I don't know what administration, you know, made that come back here, but instead of being 7%, it's like 9 or something. It's still, when you consider the amount of money these places are making. You see some things in government, you know, some of the tax. I can't get over, Kevin, that the deduction for capital expense or capital loss is the same as when I started the industry in 1981, when the Dow was 800. There's going to be some day, I mean, I don't know, who knows when, maybe not for a really long time, where somebody's going to buy one of these stocks. We got Salesforce today up, you know, $42. Somebody's going to pile in, and I'm not saying Salesforce is sell. They obviously did some good stuff, or the stock wouldn't be up here. Somebody's going to pile in and say, I got to own it, and he's going to pay $373 for it. And one of these days, 6 months from now, it's going to be $273. And the guy's got, you know, 1,000 shares times $100. Well, hell, that's a lot. That's $100,000, right? Now, the guy's got to live 33 years to wipe that out. How is it with all this stuff, little things like this that affect the population, they never come to the light of day. Nobody ever even talks about them. How does something like that even happen? I mean, and yet, there it is. I mean, we are, as a society, not you, because you like to read this stuff, and then so do I, not as much as you maybe, but somehow or another, we are led by nowhere near the facts that you and I think people should be thinking about. And good politicians are really good at that. And, you know, I mean, there's several principles, it seems like, in human. I still like to want to say too much about how everybody in the world is overpaid but you. I mean, but you look at the taxation and up and down the line where the money goes. It goes to people. It goes to agricultural programs. It goes to this program. It goes to that program. It goes to the Defense Department. By the way, when Lou sent that thing around, how many mergers have there been in the Defense Department in the last 25 years? Where it was like 100? The money, if you zero in on the dumbest part of people, you can do stupid stuff and say, oh, if we just get rid of half these people in Washington, they don't do anything anyway, they're a bunch of slumps. If we get rid of them, guess what? All your taxes are going to go down. Kevin, you and I, both of us, can see through that in a second. Yet, it is a powerful message. It's not your fault. It's these other people's fault. They're coming into work every day. They're sitting at their desk, their feet up in the air, talking on their cell phone. They're not doing a thing. By the way, if they do something, it's screwing you. They're a bunch of... If we don't shoot them, we should do something with them. Or fire them at least. Okay, fine. I guess that's the solution. You know?
Line them up. I had a boss who used to refer to the rubber gun squad.
So. Yeah. I mean, I guess... But you don't say to people, Oh, by the way, if I succeed in canning 40% of the people in Washington without causing a blip anywhere in what you get done, by the way, it's a half of 1% of the deficit. Oops. We keep forgetting the last part of this, don't we? Or like Columbo would say, there is one more thing, right?
And we know where the most exposure is and the most improvement, and it's all in the healthcare side of the equation. But that doesn't mean there isn't a lot elsewhere. And think of Homeland Security as an example. We made Homeland Security department in 2001, 2002. So that it would coordinate everything amongst all the law enforcement agencies and streamline everything and make it better. Do you think we have more coordination, that it's more streamlined? I mean, what did we see when on the assassination attempt on Trump? Coordination? Hell no.
No. Oh, no.
This is the problem is as soon as... And this is true in really large companies too. Any large organization, you start to get these bureaucratic fiefdoms, and power is they give ground grudgingly. People do not, give up power. It takes a really, really special leader to say, yeah, we need to cut back my group because we're not doing anything effectively, and we can achieve our mission with a lot fewer resources, a lot fewer people, and so we need to do that. That's exactly the kind of people you want to hire, and I would promote that person in a heartbeat. But most people are saying, nope, I ain't giving up a damn thing. This is my power is determined by how much budget I control and how many people work for me.
Well, I mean, look at the... that's one of the beautiful things, I think, about... Maybe only the beautiful thing about Stocks and Jacks is this problem slices across human nature, Kevin. I mean, you've been the guy who's been... How many people now at these college football programs, and basketball probably to a certain extent, but college football programs have all this money, and they've become these essentially professional things. What do you suppose their payroll and amount of people that work for the athletic departments is compared to 20 years ago? It's got to be triple.
Oh yeah. It's absolutely that. But it's just, look at the number of people anyway. If I just go on any major college's athletics website, they will have under the general category of athletics a staff directory. Oh my, you look at this and go, And every once in a while you can fish out an org chart for them, and it's just, that'll really tell you everything too. But the number of people who are assistant athletic directors, associate athletic directors, assistant associate athletic directors, the number of just management people that they have, and then they have all kinds of people reporting to them. It's incredible. You look at this and go, oh my God, how do you get anything done here? it's just everybody's in everybody else's way.
Well, my stepfather, who had, he grew up on the South Side, and his father was a policeman, but he was lucky enough to go on a GI Bill, didn't get killed in the war, and went to the GI Bill. But he did well, and he was an accountant, finance guy. He went to University of Chicago MBA program and the executive program, but he would tell you stuff that is so much common sense, Kevin. He goes, if I want to hire a new guy, I always want a guy who's coming from a company that was struggling. Because if you're struggling, your accounting department, they work hard and they do it properly because you really count on them. Some firm has got nothing but dough; they don't care. I don't want that guy. He probably doesn't do anything all day, and if the numbers are wrong, who cares? They got nothing but dough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He goes, if you want, you go to some mid-sized firm like Dan Janitis is always going to. Go into their accounting department, and every one of those people are probably very, very competent and do a good job, because there's probably six of them, instead of 15, and they do the job all day, and they're happy, and everybody's works together. That's what you want.
Yeah, it is exactly what you want, and that's how you want to run government. I mean, the number of people who said that when Musk bought Twitter, and I mean, what did he do? Chop out like 80% of the staff? It's a number of people who said, oh, they're going to go down. You know, they probably have more people active on their website than ever. So there's a lot of people in industry, even in large corporations, who really know it. And it is one of those things, like you just described. You can sort of, you don't have to watch very long, and you can smell it. You can smell the bloat. And then you start watching a little bit, and you start seeing where the opportunities are. And, you know, I do this, I do a lot of classes for a very large employer in our area, in an international company. And I do a lot of quality management stuff. And we get them in, and everybody brings a project from their plant, and then we pick a couple of them, and we work on them over the course of the class. And it's amazing how, you know, what we identify as it, that, you know, the lean concept is, are you doing value-added work or are you doing non-value-added work? And value-added is really anything that makes the product better for the customer, or that makes, you know, satisfies the customer need. But then you can get all kinds of lean concept things like unnecessary transportation, moving around. But when you start getting into inspections, if you have to inspect work at every step, that means you're doing crap work. And well, yeah, because those inspections may stop the bleeding. They may stop something from getting out the door, but they don't do a damn thing for product improvement.
Well, the only problem with somebody with what Musk did, and I don't know how he did it, you know, whatever, I just did this, you know, I get the feeling.
I heard a great story of how he did it, but keep going.
No, what I'm saying, that if you have a bigger organization, you're going to find people in there that actually run things very lean. So if you do something like, say, every department cut 20%, that is probably the most ignorant thing you can do, because you essentially reward the guy who's padded and doesn't need all those people, and you totally screw the guy who's been lean the whole time.
Yeah, but we're talking about two different concepts of lean. So lean, meaning I'm running with as few people as possible, is one thing. That's not what I mean by lean. There's a whole set of principles, and we can, yep, you know, I can't hang around very long here, but I do want to hear Russell's story. But I, you know, we can talk about that a different time if you want, about what those principles are and how you design work around them. And that's, you know, a lot of that would be considered like the Toyota production system as an example, and how that works.
Well, you used to work.
Well, it still works pretty darn well, it was originally built around all around just in time, and one of the things they've realized is that they can't operate on a perfect just in time. But lean doesn't mean you eliminate that you don't have any non-value added steps in your process. It means that you start working to eliminate them, and you get fewer and fewer. You're not going to get to zero, but, you know, that's a much longer conversation than we can do right now.
Wasn't the first just-in-time in the U.S. auto industry when they built a plant in Belvedere, Illinois?
Could have been.
I think it was. But Dodge made the, what funky cars did they come out with that one time? Leon Coco was still there, I think. The little car.
Okay. It was probably the Taurus.
No, Chrysler.
Oh, Chrysler.
Was it the K series?
It's the K car.
The Reliant. Yeah.
One of my old girlfriends had one of those things. They weren't bad.
No, they were cheap and efficient, and they worked. So yeah, you put it into gear and it drove. That was a good thing.
You actually stopped once in a while when you wanted to.
Yeah, we hit the brakes. It stops. So, you know, what more do you need?
I guess.
But yeah, there's a lot of concepts. And then Motorola shifted in a different direction, and they built the Six Sigma process, and that's a whole different discussion of how that works. But it targets making no more than having 3.4 flaws per million opportunities.
How many flaws do you think? How many flaws do you think professors have? None. I think they got none. They're perfect.
We're perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least two of us are.
We are perfect.
So what are you saying about poor Hal? He's not perfect.
I'm not saying anything about Hal. I'm not getting sucked into that. So what I actually heard a story about when Musk took over Twitter. He went into the San Francisco office for about 18 hours and had 5-minute meetings for 18 hours straight. And basically each of those 5-minute meetings was with a an employee of now what is now known as X, and they had 5 minutes to explain what they had done for the company in the past week.
Okay.
That was it.
And that was it. If you couldn't explain it, you were out.
Exactly. And what's funny is I heard that actually on a Joe Rogan podcast. But then I have a godson who is more impressive than either of my daughters, believe it or not. And, you know, all I do is brag on those girls. He did his senior year of college working for SpaceX and got college credit for it and graduated with a aerospace engineering degree down at Texas.
Well, good for him.
And he said that at any event whatsoever that Elon was at, he would catch it for 5 minutes and say, "Tell me what you did for the company in the past week." And people would get fired at social events sometimes if he didn't like the answer.
Well, so
that's what he does.
Is that good?
And you know what? You should be able to explain it in 5 minutes.
Well,
yeah, you should always be conscious of it. Fellas, I got to go, right. So I'm going to leave it to you guys to keep going, and I will talk to you on Friday, Tom.
All right. Russell, speaking of which, what do you think of his he's all over the judge now that didn't replace his $58 billion plan, his salary thing. Did you read that?
Is he directly attaching the judge on that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be a little upset, too.
Well, I've thought, you know, for kind of a long time, I mean, for a real long time, that one of the biggest issues we have in this country is, I think, the corporate board situation is totally out of control. I mean, when you have that the people in the company, this management class, as Eric used to talk about, the investors don't own the place anymore. This management class does, and essentially, who the hell are they? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you're, at least Carnegie and Rockefeller, it was their money, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, and they were, but the idea that you know, you can pay a guy $50 billion, wherever the hell it is, and never pay a dividend, man, you got to wonder who's on that board, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what you'd do about that, but remember.
Well, there's their boards are more independent than they used to be.
Oh, not in these
I'm
places.
I'm not saying they're perfect, but they're a lot more independent than they used to be. And that got legislated a couple of decades ago.
There's instances all over the place where stock options are issued with a deadline on them. So when a stock runs up, the chairman, even though he doesn't want to, he's forced to sell his stock options at $90 bazillion. And 2 years later, the company's broke, and he's got his money.
Yeah.
That still happens. And you know, again, you and I'd love to see you. You'd probably be really good at it. I wonder if I could dig out my old notes if I still have them somewhere. When I asked you this before. Do you guys have a class in the MBA program that it's kind of just taking individual problems and trying to apply what you learned other places? We took like one of those classes, and it was fascinating. One section was trying to determine how good a hospital was. You know, it's actually very similar to it wasn't a friend of mine. I knew him. I mean, we weren't enemies or anything.
Well, here's the really funny thing. They have two of them, and we've got a bunch of different MBA programs, but. In the evening one for professionals, which is a 2-year program, and I'm pretty heavily involved in. I'm actually on the committee that runs it now. And what we do is when they show up, like I said, it's a 2-year program. But when they show up, about 3 weeks before the first quarter starts. We have an intro dinner. You're randomly put at a table with people. And we talk about the program. Everybody takes a pledge about being a Kelly student, which I always think is kind of a neat thing. And then you go see a company presentation that has a problem that needs to be solved. And this dinner is on a Wednesday. By Saturday, the group of people that you were sitting at dinner with have come up with a case study solution. For whatever company presented their issue. the one that we just did was the Indiana Motor Speedway. Their attendance for NASCAR has been declining, and they wanted a solution or ways to maybe go about addressing that, which was kind of cool because the students got to go to the Speedway for some meetings as well. But where I'm going with this is they do that, and then they do almost the exact same thing 2 years later as their final project. And what's really cool is to see the amount of progress that people have made from the first one to the last, to what they do at the end.
Well, cool. Right?
And they recognize it as well. You know, it's like we always say is NASCAR attendance is down. Here's a amount of money they'd like to spend. Here are a couple of things they definitely don't want to do, and go tell them how to expect. You know, tell them how to turn the.
NASCAR has been dropping for ages.
I know. I don't want to get into the specifics of you know the challenges that they have, and NASCAR by itself has been dropping. It's been a bit more dramatic, but I don't want to.
Didn't the guy like sell the name or sold the whole circuit?
A couple of companies control probably 80% of the tracks that they actually run races at, and those have been traded around a bit. I can't remember the name of the company, but and it's closely associated with the NASCAR name.
Well, the group that I guess I'm still loosely associated with, but used to be more associated with, the Nigerian Family Office, they sponsored a driver 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they got any. It was a lot of dough. They got a certain amount of tickets to.
Mm-hmm.
They did something between a driver and also I don't know if it was Wounded Warrior or one of those places. They did something with. So every time there was a race somewhere, they had like five or six or ten. I never went, but mm-hmm. with children of vets in like one of the nice seats or something, like NASCAR.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that they ever found it worthwhile. I think they found it kind of weird. I don't know if it was a success for them or not. I suspect not because they stopped doing it. Plus, they got a driver who never came anywhere near the front. So again, that was a problem. I mean, there were accidents. The guy never finished a race. So I mean, I don't know how much of that would if they would have got the right driver.
That's a little irritating. Well, you get your car on TV when you have a wreck.
Yeah. But so, yeah, yeah, I mean. But
with my logo kind of crunched up.
Well, you know, I'm saying one of the things we did, we took 2 or 3 weeks to design compensation packages for people. This is in the early era of this. I mean, back in those days, it was you paid people on like quarterly profits and stuff. Plus, people didn't make anywhere near the money that they make now. I mean, the chairman of Pullman made $250. You know, when a guy in a line made made 20. So he was like 11 times, you know, a decent employee. Now it's, you know, thousands of times a decent employee.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and I don't know that the, you know, I was, you know, when you have everybody else on everybody else's company, if you get a raise, they get a raise too, because all of a sudden they go back to be chairman of their place and you're on their board and you give them a raise. I mean, it's not exactly what anybody intended, I don't think. Which isn't to say there haven't been some improvements and, I don't. I mean, none of the people on the Enron board ever had any kind of a blip. Wasn't Phil Graham's wife Wendy the head of the?
She was
the head of the discipline committee out there, wasn't she, or something? Or
well, hell, I mean, a bunch of super highly powerful people were on the board of that Theranos company.
Yeah, but they were all half dead. They were all 95 years old.
I know, but it's the same. You know, I guess you don't really want to put Henry Kissinger in jail. I'll bet it wasn't
Storm and Norman on it too. Nor Schwarzkopf.
I can't remember if Schwarzkopf.
I think he was.
I'm not 100%. I don't want to get in trouble with the wrong names this morning. But it was a bunch of like, I mean, wasn't it like George Shultz or somebody?
Yeah,
like
George Shultz was there.
Yeah, I mean it was kind of a ridiculous who's who.
Well, if you're in your 80s, they call you what? You're an octogenarian. What is their name for you being in your 90s? Not that it's a bad thing. I mean, hell, if you're
I don't really look forward to. I hope I don't make it to my 90s. It looks so painful.
You know what? Audrey's dad made it to like 96, 97.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not sick until the last week.
Wow.
One of the best experiences I ever had, Greg, reading books and so forth,
mm-hmm.
when I was reading Freedom from Fear by William Kennedy, which I still would recommend to anybody, really takes apart, it's an answer to the history of the U.S. during the Depression and World War II. And I'm going to say that 70% of the stuff that I thought was true really wasn't. You know, it's amazing when all of a sudden everything you learn, you sit there and go, wait a minute. You know, and the thing is, you know, footnotes all over the place, so you can't go too fast through it. But I would essentially bounce that off Audrey's dad, and he goes, "Oh yeah, that happened. That happened." It was, you know, they talked about Liberty ships. How was it like on those things? He goes, "They were awful, but they worked." I said, "What was the most afraid you ever were?" And he goes, "On the way back home," he goes, "This thing was so old, it's leaking like a sieve."
Oh, that's funny.
We're in steerage, and we're in this storm. And all of a sudden, the propeller's coming out of the water. He goes, "We never thought we were going to make it through tonight." And I'm thinking, I'm on all these islands, people shooting at me the whole way, and I'm going to die on the way home. What a waste that's going to be.
That would be funny.
But he said, we made it, you know. But, you know, all the part of the, what most people don't, unless you read through it, the amount of private payroll is up $146,000 in November. The yin and the yang between the Army wanting bodies to fight and the industrial complex wanting bodies to make stuff. I mean, the Army wanted a 4-million-man Army. I think they never got past 2.5 because everybody who was supposed, like my uncles, couldn't go. They were they were tool and die makers, and that was a protected class. So there was a big, you know, okay, well, you want this guy to fight. Yeah, but if you fight, you need a tank, and he's making the tank. I mean, it was that's why even stuff like the GI Bill was controversial because people wanted to go and couldn't, mm-hmm. and they didn't get SWAT, you know, type of thing. So I mean, it's,
you know, you just answered I just finally got a solution to something I've been wondering forever. When Putin started his special military operation, they were going to colleges and grabbing kids.
Yeah,
I mean, that's where they were drafting from. They were drafting college students. They weren't going to factories and grabbing guys. And now I understand why they were going after the college students as opposed to the blue collar guys.
Well, and the
I think that's what we should do next time when we have a draft.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I personally think we should draft people that are between 35 and 55.
We
can still fight, but our useful earning ages are starting to deteriorate. So take us out.
As your buddy Michael Moore, when where the hell did we invade? We invaded someplace. Was it I think it was Iraq when weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah.
The next morning he was back when you could get near the Capitol. He was out in front with a petition where all the senators and representatives and asking them to sign a petition that their kids should go first.
Yeah, I remember that.
I thought it was priceless. But anyway, I said to him, name was Elmer. I said, Elmer, what's the deal with the people enlisting? And versus, they didn't really want a whole lot of people to enlist. They wanted to draft specific groups, like you said, this age. Yeah. So he goes, the draft guy on the South Side could have been one of those crooked men that ever walked. You could buy your way out of it.
Oh my God.
He goes, yeah. Everybody, they were all crooked. You know, I mean, people don't change, do they?
I guess they don't. I just, you know, I mean, you know this about me, and hopefully I take to my grave, but I automatically always think the best of any situation until I'm shown the worst. And you know that's just I don't know. I know it has hurt me throughout my career. Because I don't realize, you know, I don't pick up on people doing nefarious things as early as I possibly should, you know.
So, I would say if I were to list the flaws of this guy, the chief, you don't like to talk to yourself in a third person, but that's my single biggest flaw.
You automatically think
I think other people are okay, and they're not.
Yeah, well, I like to give everybody a chance until, you know, until they show me the other side of them.
But that, you know, that's my upbringing. That was mm-hmm. that was a serious flaw in my upbringing, because at St. John Fisher, Marist High School, never had to worry about anybody taking anything. Notre Dame, you could open up the door, put $20 on your desk, and 4 years later, it'd still be there. The only time you locked your door was when during a football game, because somebody might be sneaking around knowing everybody who's at the game. That's the only time you locked your door ever. I don't even know where my key was. Imagine that. I just assumed that's the way everybody was, and you know, and I never was around a whole bunch of people that were crooks. So, but now, you know, boy, the trading floor and people, especially people that are in regulation and things like that, their agenda is way different than yours.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's
well, lessons learned.
Speaking of which, we did our compliance meeting yesterday, and I'll be very brief with this. Because we got a break here.
Did you get the table cleaned off for the compliance meeting?
No. We got warm stuff in here.
So you had a standing meeting.
Yeah. No, we sat over on the other side. But all the things, this is what, when you talk about, you know, Trump getting rid of regulation, I'm all for it, boy. I tell you, because the areas that are regulated, in the minutia that people go through for a small firm, you know, the low-hanging fruit, the types of things that they'll go after small people because they can. And yet, like money laundering stuff, the things you're supposed to check and supposed to find. If somebody comes in with a corporation or an LLC, you're supposed to do money laundering checks on everybody who's a shareholder over 5% or something. So everybody has to open up their entire books to you. Now, all these people have bank accounts.
Yeah.
The money's coming from somewhere. They're coming from another firm. They're coming from a bank. They're coming from someplace. And all of a sudden now, we're the PTI police? I mean, really? I mean, obviously, if somebody's coming in from Egypt or somewhere, we're surely going to pay attention, and we're going to check Interpol and the things we're supposed to do. But, I mean, the idea of they drive this responsibility onto other people. And yet, the big firms, they don't pay any attention to it. They're paying attention to it. The latest is people are stealing money, and everybody knows what an ACATS transfer is. If you decide to become a client of PTI's, okay, and you got an account, you got an account somewhere else, you fill out this ACATS form, which means PTI goes through the system and withdraws whatever you want. It doesn't have to be the whole account. You might want to bring some stock. You might want to bring some money. You might want to bring the whole account. That's for you to determine. But there's an internal system for us to go and do that. You don't have to go over and close the account yourself, like take your money in your pocket and bring it over here. So now it turns out that people are hacking the ACATS system, where they're setting up, like the example was Fidelity, and I don't think Fidelity would let this happen. They're pretty straight. Somebody could go there and have an entire new account in the name of Russell Rhodes. Okay, knowing that you have an account at PTI. All right, so now how Fidelity gets away with, you know, Fidelity, I'm not accusing them of them, but some firm, how they open that account without your driver's license and doing a little bit of checking, I don't know. But somehow or another, if you get the account open there, you send an ACATS to your account here. And it's just gone. And they're saying, you got to be careful of that. And I go, wait a minute. We have to be careful. What about Fidelity? I mean, they're setting up a whole account for somebody that doesn't even exist over there. And they snag the money. And how is that our fault? Oh, yeah, but they'll be suing you, too. And I'm thinking, can this world get any more screwed up, Russell?
No.
I mean, it's...
It's funny. I've been trying to... I have retirement accounts, like, at four different places. And I've been trying to consolidate that stuff, and none of them are, they're all kind of, mid-tier type places, and it's a nightmare to transfer the money from one place to another.
I spent
a whole day last week really just trying to do that.
Well, we have, my nephew works for us. He does all that stuff, and he does a really nice job at it, but it's everyone's a struggle. Yeah. It didn't used to be, you know. And
don't make it easy. I tried it like 6 months ago and gave up.
Well, we have somebody who's coming in, obviously no nameless, is coming in from an insurance company. Wow. All I'm going to say about that one is wow. They don't want to give up a dime. It's scary. And it's your money.
But, one of them, the three that I tried to transfer, two of them I think I got done. Another one, the only way to do it is call a number and talk to them about it. I don't want to do that.
No. Because they're going to try and talk you out of it.
I hardly want to talk to you 1 hour a week. I don't like talking to people.
You love talking to us. It gets so bad at one guy. They're going to mail a check here, because if it's a withdrawal from someplace, the check comes with your name on it.
I've got a check on the way.
Good luck with that. It was overnighted 2 weeks ago. After 5 days, I go, hey, they won't talk to us. You got to call these guys. Calls them and said, well, we forgot to put the suite number on it. Okay, well, do you have a tracking number? Not exactly. What do you mean, not exactly? In another 4 business days, we'll send out another check. Okay, well, that's now 2 weeks ago. They're just not mailing it. How do you overnight something without a tracking number?
You know, there was a Roseanne episode where they didn't have money to pay the mortgage, so she dropped a check off at the bank that she, you know, technically forgot to sign. So same trick, different level.
Yeah, but it's just, But what do you get out of it? Another week of somebody else's money? I mean, are you that hard up?
You know.
Hey, so how does? I don't want you to go into the full detail, but is Indiana? Obviously, your football team is pretty damn good. Are they all of a sudden within 2 years or have blossomed into this? You know, full NIL, full in the program. I mean,
No. That's not how it happened with them. I mean, they're getting paid. But you know, the coach was at James Madison last year, which, you know, they having gone to Notre Dame, you probably don't realize that there are 134 schools out there with football teams.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and because you guys beat up on them all the time, but he brought a big portion of that team, and that team did very, very well. You know, they were like a 10-win team in the group of five. So he brought a big portion of his team with him, and then he found a good quarterback in the portal. But I think, like, I know I'm going to get this wrong, but I feel like a good portion of the running backs and receivers came with him, and then he found a really good quarterback.
Well, do they have the depth on the lines and stuff?
The whole team is constructed from the portal and people coming with him from James Madison. They didn't go out and buy the top quarterback that was available in the portal or whatever.
Okay, so he brought people. Well, that's how sometimes.
That's what you're doing now. If you're looking for a coach, you're not just looking for a coach. Like Memphis's coach. Memphis has done pretty well over the last 5 years, considering what the resources they have and everything else. And they've had the same coach for 5 years now. He replaced the guy that's at Florida State, who you just got to really feel sorry for this year, because they got screwed last year on the the playoff thing, and then he wasn't able to keep enough players to make a run at it again this year. But if you're a power school that's fired their coach, coach, you're going to be looking around for somebody that maybe has a bunch of sophomores and juniors that'll transfer with you. And Memphis doesn't have that. They've had the same quarterback for the last 4 years. He's the only quarterback that has started all 4 years at a school right now. But you wouldn't want to hire Memphis's coach because his most talented players are graduating.
Okay, I get that.
So if you want to turn it around quickly, I don't know. You can't really look at Army. That's a different model. Can you get the Boise State coach to bring a bunch of people with him? Who knows? But that's one of the unintended consequences of being able to transfer and paying people. You can completely turn around a lousy, what has traditionally been a lousy football program, in a year. And we may, And I think SMU did the same thing, but I think they did it with deep pockets and the portal.
Well, we got to go to break here because I don't want you answering this question. If 15 people come from James Madison, how strict? I'll use another term. How strict would Notre Dame be? And are they all getting in? Did they get any A's? Did they go to the class at James Madison?
Oh, you've got to be joking with me that you're asking about that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to, but I just wonder how.
I mean, they don't. I mean they make 100. But you know, you guys were talking about athletic department staffs. A big portion of the athletic department staff is just making sure that the players are doing what they're supposed to do. Now that might be taking a bunch of online classes or whatever, but they make darn sure that they're academically doing what they're supposed to do.
I'm going to say Indiana probably does. Yeah. I don't know that.
No, I know Memphis does because I Memphis, at least on the basketball team, they have two managers for each player. And the managers, part of their job is to keep the player on track academically.
I'm trying not to accuse anybody here, and we do have to go to break. But I just wonder, I was watching some game last week, and the guy's on his third or fourth school, and he's only like a junior, because he started out at some junior college, and he went somewhere. I just wonder, if you got all this going on, you're not supposed to have, quote, an agent. If you're doing all this yourself, and you're going to practice, and you're going to meetings, is there any time for class? I'm not accusing anybody of not going.
No, Joe Burrows, they asked him if he was going to miss LSU, and he said, "I never set foot in the classroom."
Oh, that's an interesting statement.
It was all online.
Well, but it's not online anymore.
Not online anymore. It is.
So I could go to Notre Dame and never get my ass out of the dorm.
Not at Notre Dame, but at other schools. You're gonna use one school as an example of me on that one. No, but you can. There are online classes that you know that the football players can take, that the athletes can take, and they do.
Well, I guess if you're teaching a class, I mean, I know you don't do the undergrad anymore. If you were an undergrad and you're teaching a class in engineering, do you expect people to show up? I guess that's the basic question. I don't even know now.
At Indiana, you cannot. We expect you to go. We don't offer online undergraduate business classes because we think we've got a deep belief that part of the reason you're in business school is to learn how to interact with other people.
Well, I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there are plenty of schools that have. Enough online classes that you can figure out a way to really never have to actually go into the classroom. That wouldn't work. That wouldn't work in Indiana, but apparently it worked down at LSU.
Well, probably it was kind of COVID.
And you know what? In my mind, that's the difference between the Big Ten and the SEC right there.
Well, was that just because of COVID year, or they do it all the time?
No. It wasn't just because of COVID. It's something that they continuously are able to do.
SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 140. You're going to tell us when we come back how many more days in a row we can go up 1%.
Two.
Two? Okay. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, and we're back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures are up 18. NASDAQ futures up 149 every day. Just relentless, relentless. Today was Salesforce. The straddle was 22 or 23 bucks, and I think or was it 30 bucks, and now the thing's up 41. So, you come up with a good story, and boy, there's just no number that these stocks can't trade at, it doesn't appear. I mean, it's just unreal. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 27, was up huge yesterday. Let's call that flat. Hang Seng down 3, call that flat. Shanghai, which I think had a 1% move to the upside yesterday, is down 14.4% there, so just a little bit. We got this thing going on in South Korea, which maybe Russell will talk about when we come back. The guy declared martial law, and then the parliament wouldn't go along with him, so he said, okay, we're not going to have martial law. So it's something kind of weird going on over there. Kind of weird. DAX up 143.7%, FTSE down 22.2%, CAC around up 22.3%. As a way of yesterday, the Dow was down 76, the S&P up 2, NASDAQ managed to be up 76, so NASDAQ's been up like every single day. Russell was actually down yesterday. Russell has been doing pretty well. Bonds, 10-year up 5 basis points, 4.27. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.09. Japan down 1 basis point, 1.01. Oil, which has been kind of struggling. It is over 70, though, $70.10, up 16 cents. Brent up 22 cents, 73.84. Natural gas down 4 cents, 2.999, so under 3 bucks. RBOB unchanged at 196. Gold, down $1.50. It was up yesterday. Silver down 26 cents and a big move up yesterday. I recall coming back a little. Copper down 2 cents. Foreign exchange, it's been pretty steady here after it making a move. Actually, the dollar is under, the euro is under 105, 104.9. A British pound the same, 126.7. The British pound's been stronger than the euro versus the dollar. Japanese yen up 122 to 150.81. And we've got Bitcoin, which had been up to almost 100,000, back down to 94 something. Now it's at 95,789, up 216. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
All right, it is 7:36 here in Chicago. That is Wednesday, December 4th. Starting off with a little bit of sports, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but there looks like not much yesterday in terms of our favorite teams.
No. Right.
Okay, good. I was worried I was missing something, but yeah, not too eventful of the day. But for the weather, things are going to be a little bit in the middle here. Let's see, over in Phoenix, they're currently at 49 degrees. They're going to have partly sunny and pleasant skies. They're going to have a high of 77. Here in Chicago, we are currently at 28 degrees. Might have a little bit of snow this afternoon, about an inch maybe. Otherwise, the high is going to be 38, and some wind and clouds are going to be coming in. Other than that, for Chicago traffic, if you're coming in from the south side on the inbound express, expect heavy delays from all the major expressways. There are no accidents to worry about, thankfully. And if you're on the outbound, excuse me, look out on the Eisenhower near Austin Boulevard and on the Kennedy right near Foster Avenue, as traffic is building up pretty heavy out there. But other than that, business is looking as about usual. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Back to usual. So, Russell, we've got a lot of... I don't know what they're doing. A lot of people seemingly heading down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the mistletoe, big executives and so forth. I don't think that's all that abnormal, but it's happening. And some of these stocks, and all you have to do, I mean, you look at Meta has been up, 3% 2 or 3 days in a row because the guy went down to talk to Trump. Tesla's up every single day because Musk now, he didn't have Thanksgiving when he was 11 kids. He decided to have it with Trump, right? I mean, what are people thinking they're all going to, what favors do you think they're going to get? How much higher can these stocks go?
I almost don't think it's favors. I think it's just to avoid his wrath.
Maybe.
You know, I think that's, Justin Trudeau initially wanted to meet with them and he said no. So then Trudeau just went down there kind of anyway, which I find really funny. He said, I don't need to meet with you. You're getting ready to be replaced anyway. Because he is getting ready to be replaced. I think that you definitely want to be as much on his good side as you have, as you can be.
And well, I think that's totally a pragmatic truth, but it just kind of makes me nervous a little bit.
I just think it's more of just trying to be on the right side with him. And it cannot hurt to go meet him in person. exact same thing is happening with China, where some CEOs have to go over there and try to smooth things over.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you can't tell me that Apple does not have some potential issues with China, because their CEO has been over there 3 times this year, just talking to the government.
What do you make of this episode in South Korea? And they're talking about people infiltrating from the north, and boy, you never.
Well, I was told in all kinds of terms that I have no clue what I'm talking about on that. So, I don't really, you know, my assumption, and the way I look at something like that is you've got I don't care how raggedy they are, you've got probably a million people in an army that has been brainwashed to take you out at some point. And
yep.
And they're probably, they do all kinds of silly stuff over there. The North, they like a bunch of bags of garbage and just send them across the border at them. I mean, they do really silly crap all the time. And they're constantly screwing with them. And my assumption was that this guy was taking action because it had reached a point where they needed to honestly do some weeding out. Like I said when emails were flying around, I always assumed that there's a real positive reason or a justifiable reason when somebody does something like that. And I've got slapped around and told it was nothing but a power grab and what a piece of crap the guy that did that was. That I don't really know,
I don't
think any of us know what it's like to, live. Seoul is, like Naperville to Chicago between North Korea and where Seoul is in South Korea. What do you think it's like growing up somewhere? I mean, we grew up with the whole go duck under the desk when the nuclear war happened.
And kiss your ass goodbye.
And if somebody had a Russian accent, they were automatically our enemy. We're not quite like that anymore because we're not doing under the desk drills for nuclear war anymore. But that's the way I assume life is like in South Korea. You got a whole bunch of people just like yourself on the other side of a line, and a bunch of them want to take you out, and they got weapons pointed at you all the time as well. And those weapons don't have to travel halfway around the world. They just have to travel across the line to get you.
Well, yeah, out of all the things think about and we talk about, Russell,
mm-hmm.
nothing, how can I put this politically correctly? There's crap going on all over the world, and you can't focus your day on it. I mean, you have to go teach. I've got to manage money for people.
Yeah.
But yet. I mean, we've been there since when? 1950 something. The thing has been it's never been a solution. It's a truce, right?
They basically are still technically at war.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah. I, mean, I guess I never.
It's a pause.
But I guess I never put two and two together as to what kind of infiltration. I mean, you can't get across the zone because it's armed on both sides. But I guess you can. Y'all speak the same language. Everything, all you need is a little submarine or a rubber duck, and you get in on the land. I mean,
You've got to assume that the North has people, actors in the South.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I guess I never thought about it until I saw this thing, and I'm going, yeah, it must be pretty hard to keep. If somebody is against you politically, do you think that he's against you for like the right reasons, it's labor versus whatever, or is he against you because he's from the North?
He's against you because he's from the North, and you have been brainwashed. And the North people in the North are taught that if it weren't for the United States, Korea would be a unified country.
I wouldn't mind that so much if it was unified like the South, not like the North.
Well, and it should be. Well, and they had pushed the South almost to the sea, and then we came in and pushed them back up. It got pushed in both directions, and basically they all ended up at the agreed 38th parallel line after a bunch of people were killed for no reason.
How many people do we have still over there? The whole division? No, it's not the whole division, is it?
I don't know if it's the whole division. I'm sure it's a sufficient number of troops. My assumption is the people that we have in Korea, they're there for Korea, but they're also there for China now. So you can't really.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they're the same place, China and North Korea. I mean, I don't think that guy survives too long without China's help.
No, oh goodness gracious, no.
Well, you see valuations like we're seeing, and we see the markets going up every day. Obviously, you know, clients are making money. We're doing fine with it. Last thing I want to do is to see this whole mess, you know, turn around and go the other way. But I also don't like valuations that maybe are non-sustainable, because I've seen it happen going the other way, and it's not very pretty. And I would rather not that happen. So, I'm kind of surprised that the Fed, and I don't know who they're taking their direction from these days, whether it's people behind the curtain or whether it's Trump or whether, I don't know if you ever really listened to Biden, but they do, I never thought they were independent for like a really long time, but they're right back exactly on this 5.1. I mean, every month of the last four, it's on an annual basis, we're up 5.1%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where did that come from, Russell?
That's just a good number.
But it's clearly above growth.
Yeah.
And if it's above growth, it's by definition inflationary, which is exactly what they're telling people they're not doing. I mean, mm-hmm. is everybody that... I mean, we just don't give the numbers out so much anymore. We assume nobody's looking at them?
One of the things that seems to have come out is that we've talked about just the huge disconnect between the numbers and what people actually experience. And I think it's reaching a point. We've talked about how you know, we're so close to this stuff that we tend to pick up on things before they actually impact the markets, and try to figure out the timing around all of that is one of the most difficult things that we have to try and deal with. And we see these numbers that are obviously manipulated, and then Don Lemon goes out and talks to somebody on the street about who they're voting for, and they say, well, I'm going to vote for Trump because inflation. And Don Lemon says, well, but the government is, you're wrong, the government is telling you that inflation is coming under control under the Biden administration, those numbers are coming down. And Don Lemon is basically telling somebody based on an economic number how they should feel and what's going on in their personal financial lives. And I think now we just see a gigantic disconnect between those numbers and reality.
Trust me, and you're doing fine.
Then you got to figure out, well, what's the motivation behind lying around the numbers?
Well,
difference does it make?
Did you see the thing that Lou sent around about the Russian economy? I actually want to talk to you a little bit about that, about how what's all the stuff that's kind of falling apart over there because of the cost of the war and everything.
Well, he was prepared for a 6-month war.
Yeah,
and he was prepared for some sanctions. He wasn't prepared for how long the war is lasting and how severe the sanctions are.
Well, when the guy who wrote up, he's talking about all the different things in the, manufacturing is this, and 40% of their budget now is going for military or something. But the one part was there's an admitted 20% price increase, but everybody knows it's 40%. It sounded like here, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're admitting to 20%, but all the consumers know that it's 40%. God, are we that much like them that the government?
Yeah. We're maybe not to the extreme, but yeah.
Well, once you start lying to people, what's why not keep going?
And the people keep and you realize that you don't get a whole lot of push. This past election might be a pushback on the lying.
Well, I think,
and I'm not saying that one side lies and the other side doesn't. They both do, but. It just got to be so extreme. It's gotten to be so extreme that everybody was like, I'm not voting for anything that's establishment oriented anymore.
Well, I hope that for second term, the guy does a much better job than his first term. But it is, the inflation happened. Not saying that, you know, COVID wasn't a mitigator for sure, but the inflation happened in Trump's term.
Yeah. No, it started happening.
Yeah. I mean, it was, that's when the explosion of the currency happened. You know, and it's he's still not owned up to that in any kind of public form. Maybe he has in private. But, I mean, I hope he at least knows that. I mean, do you think he does?
Yeah.
He probably does, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we don't have anybody talking about that stuff. You know,
no, not at all.
And yet we think something's going to... I really do think, that Russell, the more I read about it, I shouldn't do this because God does aggravate me. Read about the Weimar Republic and how the farmers absolutely loved it. Because the inflated numbers meant they paid their farms off in 6 months.
and then they all got run over by tanks.
Well,
they had about 12 good years or so, and then.
But the farmers were they never gave the farms back, right? So it's sort of like if I borrowed $100 from Russell, and we had mega inflation here, and it actually was 50% for 2 years, and I walked back and said, oh, by the way, here's your hundo, and you're going, wait a minute, that hundo is only worth 50. And I'd say, that's your problem, not mine, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what, to a certain extent, that's what governments want to do. They want to pay you back. If they borrowed, let's say in 2000, and, let's go back to 2020, Russell. Mm-hmm. If they did a 30-year bond, and they bought it, and you bought it from them, and they pay you back whatever the interest was, if they pay you back 6 years from now, I'm going to say the money they pay you back with is not even worth half of what it was when you gave them.
Yeah.
And the interest was...
Yeah.
I mean, what if the interest was like 2 or 3%? You're not even breaking even.
No, you're actually experiencing, real negative returns.
Yeah. And I think for some reason, we've done that here. I mean, can you go mad? Do you know anybody in your? Have you ever asked the question? Asked when you're, doing your European stuff? Do you ever ask anybody over there what the balance sheet of the European Central Bank looks like when they were buying bonds at negative interest?
No, I've never really dug into that part of how things work over there.
What do you think? I bet they bought stuff at 150 and it's trading 70.
It's very possible, yeah.
And nobody says boo unless you're a bank that has to sell. It's crazy.
I don't think they've had a situation where banks have had to sell.
Well, like the one place here did. The place in
Silicon Valley Bank did. Yeah.
Yeah. But the government's never going to.
No. Well, and Silicon Valley Bank, they just that was just. That was somebody who didn't understand how the bond market worked.
Well, we see the... you can go here and you can find the Federal Reserve balance sheet.
Uh-huh.
Now, if all the stuff they bought... Well, they bought a lot of short-term stuff, too, so it's not like it's everything. And they bought mortgages that have run off. But if the fact that the 10- and 30-year stuff that they bought 3-4 years ago, that has to be mark-to-market. Do they drop the size of the balance sheet and take a loss if it's marked, or they just leave it sit there because thinking they're going to get paid back? I bet they just leave it sit there.
They leave it sit there.
They don't have to mark the market like you and I do.
See, that's what Silicon Valley Bank was trying to do, but then all of a sudden people started withdrawing cash, so they had to sell the stuff at a huge discount. To the par value, not to the market or anything, just to the par value.
Well, I'm going to shift gears for a minute totally here. Indiana has not been a football power, but my question
not since
is
1967.
Do those people travel? I mean, Nebraska could play in Hawaii and they'd find a way to drive their Winnebago to Hawaii. That's just the way they are. But if Indiana is going to play somebody on the road, are you going to get 30,000 Indiana fans drive there for the game?
We're going to get 30,000 Indiana fans. It'll be interesting to see how many Indiana fans travel to, because they're going to have to play a road game for the first round of the football playoff.
What does it look like they're playing? Do you know?
I just freaking saw that like a minute ago. While we were on the break, I was looking at it because they put that out last night, and I feel like they've got them playing at Georgia, and if they beat Georgia, then they get to play Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably. If that were like the NCAA bracket, and that's the team that got completely. I mean, that's just how the rankings turned out last night. We'll see after the conference championship games this weekend.
Well, if everything works out the way it is, the Irish would play Alabama or like Arizona State or somebody.
They'd play Alabama at home, and then they would play if they win. They would play at SMU.
The next round's in a bowl game.
I said they would play SU. I didn't say the quarterfinals are all those New Year's Day bowls now.
Well, the wild card in this whole mess now is Boise State, because if they win, they're going to be the top ranked. They're going to be number four, not the Irish.
Right, and they do. You know what? And they freaking deserve it.
I do too. I agree.
You know, their only loss is to Oregon at Oregon by three.
What do you make of, I'm supposed to know this stuff, Stocks and Jacks. I didn't realize till like a week or two ago, dummy that I am, I still thought the Big Ten was West and East. And those guys, when did that stop?
That stopped a while ago.
So what is the point of having the first two teams playoff? There's no championship.
Because I'll tell you why. Because they you would have Ohio State and Michigan on the same side of the conference, so you wouldn't get your two best teams in the conference championship game.
Well, now that you have
I really think that's why you made the change, because you would rather have. You'd rather have, what do we have? We have Oregon versus Penn State. If we had divisions, I don't know how it would have been broken down, et cetera, but it's very possible that, Indiana might have been able to slip into the championship game a little more easily.
Well, I mean, since half the teams are...
They do it because they want the two best teams in the championship, in the Big Ten championship.
Well, it's not like there isn't a...
do that for ratings and ticket sales, etc.
Well, it's not like the East and West. There isn't an East and West in the Big Ten now, for God's sake.
No, but when there was an East and then on the West side you had, and I'm not disparaging these schools at all. I think every Big Ten school is, great academically and great athletically. But when you had West versus East, the West, before we got the West Coast teams, was Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, and then on the other side you had, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, who pretty much each year are the three best teams in the league. And when you had West versus East, you always had you just had a weaker team coming from the West.
Well, I mean, as Kevin said
that's why they did it.
But as Kevin said on Monday, it makes no football sense. I mean, there's no reason they have Ohio State and Michigan undefeated. Say,
you know what? Having Oregon play in the Big Ten championship this coming weekend, if you think about it, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. SMU is playing in a team from Dallas. Is playing in the Atlantic Coast Conference championship game this weekend.
Well, if they're... I'm just saying that if Ohio State played Michigan last week, and they're the best two teams, you really don't need them playing again next week, do you? I mean, it's just another game for everybody to get hurt. I mean,
but think about the amount of money that they get for that championship game as part of the... how valuable... That's got to be the super valuable piece of the whole television contract.
Well,
in fact, I saw a graphical breakdown. 10% of viewership is, or 70% of college football teams get only 10% of the viewership. It's just 30% of the teams that are, that are getting all the eyeballs, but the networks are having to pay for all of, to get a whole league so that they can get those premier games.
Do you think
it's the same thing? It's the same thing with trying to structure your championship game. You want the very best championship game to make yourself attractive for the TV money.
Well, the two things. One is next week, maybe if Kevin will maybe have between you and Kevin and me, maybe we'll dig through some of these contracts. Are these TV contracts going to continue up? I don't know. I mean, is there a limit of some kind? There have been times when those guys have...
There is a limit to the amount of money that is out there, you know, and now that more of it is going to the players with the NIL stuff, you've got a booster that it usually, you know, he's a good old boy that donates $100,000 to the athletic department and gets to play golf with the head football coach once a year. Instead of giving it to the athletic department, they're giving it directly to the players now. So how does that impact the universities?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's
Well, I can tell you one way it's impacting them is they're starting next year. They're only going to be allowed to have 105 as opposed to 150 on the football roster. All 105 can get scholarships, but still, that right there is ruining one of the fun parts of college football.
Well, actually, what they're saying is,
you know, that somebody, you'll never have a Rudy in the future because. You don't have the walk-on type thing or the practice squad.
Well, you just got to put them on scholarship.
But they're not going to put Rudy on scholarship.
No, but they.
You're not gonna have the ability if you were pretty good in high school and you go to a mid-tier school and you'd like to be involved in the football program, it's just not going to happen anymore.
Well, I think what they're also trying to get at, and something that you don't think about too much, Russell, is since they're giving some of these guys all this money. For instance, if you had 105 guys on scholarship, and you got the Irish guy last year, Hartman, coming in with the sponsorship from Under Armour, he could pay his own tuition, right?
Yeah,
you don't.
Maybe the company should be paying.
But what they're saying with this is he can't be on the team because if he had 105 guys before, he's 106.
You're allowed to have up to 150, which with a bunch of walk-ons that help you with practice and everything. But next year you're going to have to limit that number to 105. But you're allowed to give scholarships to all 105.
Well, is the piggy move up? When I say piggy move up, scholarships used to be ranked in terms of seniority is a bad term, but if you were on a football ride, you could go play baseball. If you're on a baseball ride, you couldn't go play football.
I have no idea.
Yeah, because you couldn't just, if you had five extra guys, you couldn't put them on the baseball team and have them all play football or the soccer team. So there was a pecking order. Like Samardzija was on a football ride in Notre Dame. He could go pitch for the baseball team. But if he was a pitcher, if he went and played football, they'd have to switch his scholarship from baseball to football. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you even do that anymore, if you have to do that.
I have no idea.
That's been a long time. So what do you got going this weekend? Are you here or are you down there? When's your break?
I'm on break. I'm on break until the middle of January. I've got the winter quarter off from
here. Well, then we got to see you downtown.
I'm finishing at least a book.
We got to take you downtown. You got to be downtown at least one more time.
I probably will be one day next week.
All right, bud. Well, let's talk. S&P futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 165. Buy the dip. Yesterday wasn't even a dip. It was a buy. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.